questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. Jonathan is at a crossroad in his leader's journey. He's completed all of the Illuminate questions and surfaced his vision of meaningful change. In this episode, he reveals how it feels to lose himself before finding his true path. As he embarks into the next phase of his leader's journey, I explain what it means to amplify and then ask him what he's bringing with him of all that he's illuminated so far. Jonathan, you've now completed the Illuminate phase. Do you have any reflections overall or in particular on the last card you played, the one about courage?
I certainly have reflections and feelings, very strong feelings about the path we've taken together so far over 6 days. Yesterday marked the sixth day. Wonderful. I have a very strong feeling, a very good feeling, a very positive sense about what was going on there. I talked about the power of conversation, how conversation alone can sometimes be enough to unlock feelings or bring to the surface things that were hidden up until then. And back to this image of digging something up, and as it comes to the surface, you start carefully dusting it off so that you see what's there. And some of our conversations were so difficult. And this is the beauty of the process, I think, that and it's perhaps too early for me to talk about the entire process, the process you have created, Marianne, because we're only, a third of the way through. But it strikes me that there is a confrontation, a good and necessary confrontation in each question, that they're so hard when you first see these questions, that there's almost a moment of panic where you think, oh my God, it's just so vast. How do I get a grip on this? Where do I get some purchase here? How do I get a grip, a foothold? And that comes through conversations. And I think our best conversations, and there have been many of them, there weren't just one or two, there were several. The best conversations, I think, are not so far away from that image of writing that I offered, where you're patiently digging your way through a mine, a coal mine, which is dark. You have no light. There is no light. You're working with your feeling. You're inching your way forward. A good morning's work might be 5 inches forward. And then you start again after the break, and you're hoping to find the next chamber, the next opening, the next corridor. And in our conversations, it felt that when the conversation unlocked something, there was just a little doorway to the next room, and we would enter that room together. So the process, I think, is incredibly powerful, the power of conversation. But it has, in spite of all of that, taken me at least to moments of clarity as well and certainty around the vision. That the vision that we arrived at, my vision feels good. I feel very certain about that. It feels right to me. It feels very personal. Even though, you know, I'm fully aware that these are values and ideas that have been worked and reworked and tarnished and then cleaned and rescued and then lost again and again and again. These are the ideas that have been whispered down the centuries. So I have no illusions about that. But I feel that my own sense of them and how those competing visions of the good life exist in a really healthy and necessary tension, and that the power, the energy comes from that tension between them. That all feels very clear in my mind, very clear and personal and good. So what am I saying here? In spite of a very difficult process with confrontation, questions which are confrontational, so hard that they're confrontational, challenging you, and where our conversations have often been this walking together through some dark passageway, hoping, digging, trying to find the light. In spite of all of that, ending with a moment of clarity, which I know is not the end. It's not the end. We're still on the journey, but it's that this process that you have created leads ultimately to moments of clarity. Let's call it that. Moments of clarity for now, I think is wonderful.
I am so delighted. And by the way, if any of you hear anything in the background, I should have introduced our fifth participant in this podcast. His name is Moose, and he is as British as you come. He is a corgi, just like the Queen used to be so enamored of. Jonathan, you have, in that one of those final words, captured what Illuminate is all about: clarity. And I so appreciate that those questions, many of them are challenging in different ways, and that some of this has been difficult, because sometimes when we dig for things, we see what we don't want to see or what we can't see yet. And that's really frustrating. You know it may be there and it's just not within your grasp yet, but it does emerge, right? Yeah.
What you just said there, Marianne, gets to the heart of it. When it's just out of reach, just out of your grasp, you know, when we're in the middle of a difficult conversation, we sometimes say, "Oh, I've lost my thread. I've lost my thread." We all feel that moment of panic in the middle of a sentence where you say to yourself, "Oh my God, where am I going? Oof, where am I going here? What on earth am I saying?" And it's, you sense the ground falling away between you. You're in free fall.
Yes, I was going to say free fall, yeah.
You're in free fall. Where have I gone here? Yeah. Can I complete this sentence? Where did I begin? So we lose ourselves, yeah? For a moment, we lose ourselves. And it's that's the hard work within you to find the ground again and get that foothold again, yeah. Which is wonderful. You've often said, firm ground, terra firma. You've said that many times, Marianne. Exactly that, because we do need that. We need to be uplifted. We want to soar and allow our ideas to fly. But ultimately, as humans, we do need firm ground in the end.
Spoken by someone who's talking about now new ground.
You know, and this opens up a point I wanted to somehow fit into this conversation about this card on courage. And I didn't see an opening yesterday. This might be it. This free fall example is a great segue into the unknown nature of conversation, the way that you approach it in its most genuine and authentic way. Do you realize how courageous you are for so wholeheartedly embracing conversation in your life that you are willing to dive in feet first, flapping in the water, not sure how deep it is, and just doing it for the sake of doing it? That takes such incredible courage that the majority, I'm not going to say everybody at all, but definitely more than 50% of the population on the entire globe struggles with.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I hope I have that courage.
Yes. And
it's funny, there's a contradiction here. Again, it's not, as I hear you say that, it's not, the answer to that is, oh, it's because I've it's because I've got something to say. Yeah, I have something to say. That was a different mantra for a different time.
Yes.
It's the idea that maybe I don't have something to say now, but let's have the conversation anyway.
Incredible.
You know.
It's such a hallmark of integrity in you that I've, like I've said, I'm sitting in the space this week that you are weaving with your words, with your contribution to this conversation. And I am not entering into a space of assessment or judgment. I am listening ideally for everything you have to say and the feeling behind it. And when I'm doing that, I'm exposed to perspectives on concepts that I'm familiar with that make those concepts new.
Mm.
And conversation is one of those for me that you've really opened up. It's been beautiful. I really appreciate that in this week.
Well, thank you as well. I'm keenly aware that I've discovered new pathways to new rooms and chambers that I've never been in before.
Oh, so, that's fun.
And I wouldn't have arrived at those just sitting,
in a room by yourself.
It wouldn't have happened. It doesn't work like that. You need the stimulation of conversation.
You really do.
So had we given you a deck of cards with each question on it?
It just wouldn't have worked. It would have been interesting. I mean, the cards are interesting, but the energy, just the energy levels, we know this, yeah? Fiction gives you energy because it pulls you into the story. And as your mind goes into the story and you and that world is exploding inside your head. Yeah? You recreate the writer's world inside your head. There's energy, energy, energy. If you have the cards on their own as just questions, it will stimulate some intellectual curiosity. You might note down a few bullet points as answers. Yeah, that's good, but that's it. At best, what it might inspire you to write a short essay or an article, also good. But wow, I mean, we've gone a long way beyond that. And as I said at various points, you know, how do we save ourselves? It's when you're in the middle of the conversation and you just feel it, that this is it. This is the value here.
Mm-hmm.
This conversation is not a strategy to get from A to B. It is the thing. It's the thing.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the thing.
Do you see a difference, Jonathan? Because I know you love conversation generally, right?
I love this sort of conversation. Let me say again. This is where I'm deeply grateful. I'm not used to this because, again, as soon as the group gets wider, I disappear. My dearest friends will tell you this. You know, the number of times over my life, people have said to me, "John, are you okay? You're a bit quiet tonight." And it hurts me so much, yeah.
Because you're listening?
Their comment hurts me because they're being kind, yeah. But it hurts me because it's that moment where you feel I'm not who I want to be.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not the person I see myself. I've never been the life and soul of the party. I couldn't be. I knew that at a very early age. I'm not the life and soul of the party. I'm not the raconteur. That's fine. I'm at peace with that. But nonetheless, when people, close friends have said to me, "Oh, yeah, Jonathan, you were a bit quiet tonight." Mm-hmm. I can't accept that. It really hurts me. It's hurting.
It's a wound. Why is that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Why would you be quiet when you have so much to contribute?
I don't know. I really don't know.
And the more people in the conversation, the more quiet you become.
Yes, yes.
Versus this.
Yes, and it's not fear of interrupting. You know, I will happily interrupt if I, again, we talked about anger, the healthy anger that comes from a place of care, love and care, where you have to say something because you care about it. So it's not that. I don't know. I suspect it's, being extrovert, introvert is a lot about energy. And if you are an introvert, as I am still today, it's about your energy levels. And there is just something inside you. This is more, I think it's more physical than spiritual. It's just easier somehow to stay quiet. I think the answer is, in some ways, that simple. And I try to imagine what it's like to be an extrovert, and that's difficult because I imagine it feels so different. But I think there's something with energy levels that that you have within you. I know that I'm mostly, and again, listening to what friends have said about me, a mostly very calm person. That doesn't worry me. I don't reject that. I feel at peace with that. And maybe that's part of it as well.
So how many people fit around your dinner table?
8 in Copenhagen. I wouldn't say it's my favorite number.
6?
6. I think at 6 you can still have one conversation.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with conversations breaking off and having different conversations. Nice. That can be nice. But I think I prefer to have a single conversation. Yeah.
So then if you imagine being at your dinner table and hosting 4 of your friends, and Liz and you are creating this hygge environment, and the evening's going well, you have a deck of cards to your name now. Do you see yourself potentially pulling out one and starting the conversation that way?
Not with these cards.
Not with these cards. Leave them in the drawer. Okay.
Yeah. Not with these cards. And I say that out of deep respect for what you have done. I wouldn't do it. Certainly wouldn't do it with these cards. And the reason for that is while the overarching purpose of what you're doing and how you bring the person there, Marianne, through these cards, through, and I have glimpses of the huge amount of research and work and thinking that you've put into the creation of this. So all of that still remains rightfully a mystery to me. I think it would be wrong if we were a third of the way through. I think, I've got it now. Yeah.
I know the next question.
Yeah, that would be wrong. So the fact that the mystery is still there and that I still feel a little bit lost in a good way, lost but full of trust in the process. That's why I wouldn't pull out one of these cards, because one thing I have understood partially, I think, that there is a path here. There is a chronology, that there is a sequence, there is a proper sequence to these cards. I can't see that. You have created it. You saw it. You've created it. You know that sequence, and I'm following it in a spirit of trust. So I don't think you could pull out one card. Again, intellectually, I'm sure it would be interesting. It would stimulate a good conversation, but that's not where we're going with this. It's something else, I think.
Mm-hmm. 2 more things I'd like to pick up on, because we talked about free fall earlier, and you spoke about losing yourself. And so the paradox is we have to lose ourselves before we can find ourselves, yeah?
Yes, I think that's right. And that there's more than, that's more than just, it sounds very poetic. Mm-hmm. I think there's a real human experience here with a hard edge to it. I think it's lose ourselves. When we lose, you know, what's more disconcerting than losing not only a sense of ourself, our identity, but when we lose ourselves within the landscape? We talked about the uncanny. This idea that we see the world, we know that that's a building, that's a road, that's a tree, that's a bus stop. We can name the things around us, but it doesn't feel familiar. That sort of loss is, in my recent experiences, the worst, where you can be in a beautiful city like Copenhagen and still feel lost because it doesn't feel like home yet. You know, you want it with every bone in your body. You want it to become home. Let this place become home. I want to feel at home here. But there's a truth inside you, a truthful voice, which says, no, it isn't yet, mm-hmm. For whatever reason. And I still don't have the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. So you have to feel that, I think. So if we stick with the idea of Copenhagen, just for the sake of this part of the conversation, I really hope that I will find myself, to take back your words, Marianne, that I will find myself in Copenhagen and feel it deeply as a home, a new home, but be able to look back on those moments where I was lost and understand what that feeling was, mm-hmm. why I felt mm-hmm. lost.
And map that for a moment to your vision.
Mm. Mm.
When you have experienced all dimensions of home,
yeah,
the loss of home, the discomfort, the searching for home, and yet also knowing home, mm. feeling home mm. when you're there.
Yes.
So when you start to talk about a shared home with all of those who may, at whatever level, feel disenfranchised from their own home,
mm. yes.
it allows you to see it from all perspectives, Mr. Visionary, yeah. does it not?
Yes, and it's perhaps why that first word is so important, shared. Mm-hmm. It's just an adjective, yeah? mm-hmm. in this sentence. It's the first adjective. Mm-hmm. But I think you've pointed out there why that word is so important. A home as an idea is very powerful, but a shared home, that's probably some hint of what's missing at the moment for me in my own life in Copenhagen, that it doesn't feel shared yet, mm-hmm. that I don't have a share in it. I'm sort of guessing here. I don't know, but what you have done, Marianne, is remind me, I think, of why that first word is so important. Shared. It has to be a shared home.
What do you mean, Jonathan, you don't have a share in it?
No, obviously not in the financial sense. Let's be clear that in the financial sense, a share in that maybe the... I think part of me wants to feels that we when we go to a new place we have to earn something. We have to, you know, why do we learn a language? We want to show, we want to fit in, we want to be able to communicate and understand the indigenous people, the locals. That's a good instinct. It's a healthy instinct. There is something here about the time that is needed to perhaps earn your place a little bit. A country welcomes you. It has. This country has let me in with very few questions. That's one of the beautiful things of the modern European idea. We can move from one home to the next with very few questions asked. Yeah, it's a beautiful aspect of our European home today in its current form. Yeah?
Again, that yeah. you see that mm. when you're about to convey a vision of a shared home,
mm-hmm.
it is not always the case.
No,
you can invite someone into a home to share it with you, and they can't get in.
Mm. Yes, and this will be that. Well, this is already one of the most difficult challenges facing Europe as a whole at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
How do we welcome? How do we bring in the outsider? It's the most difficult question mm-hmm. facing the European Union and perhaps any country around the world at the moment. It's an ancient. This is an ancient question. It's not a modern question.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think there's something about, if I look at my own life at the moment, I feel a sense that I need to, if I don't feel that I have a share in it, you know, is that because the city is not letting me in? Or is it because I've not quite done enough yet? I mean, just let's bring this to a very, very practical, tangible level. The life I've chosen over the last year and a half, largely writing a book, is necessarily a lonely life. Yeah, I need to. I hide away in a room so that I can do my work. that's not a great way to get to know a city. So I'm aware of the big contradictions here. I'm not blind to them.
And not when one of your five words was community.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How do these words sound? Ancient questions about the future of Europe.
They sound very good.
Would you read it?
Yeah, ancient questions about the future of Europe, yeah.
Would you buy the book? Would you?
Yeah, I'd certainly pick it up and flick through, you know, the introduction, and it's got a good ring to it.
So it's quite important you write a strong introduction.
Oh, well, Marianne, you know communications, yeah. The first line.
I know your writing.
You've got to get the first.
Your caliber of writing, you would pull him right in.
Yeah, you've got to get the first line right.
Yeah. And when you're speaking, it's 3 minutes.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So again, shared home. Let's come back to that. Why that simple, very simple, familiar adjective is so important here. That it's a shared home. That's the beginning, but perhaps also the heart of the vision. It's not just home, but a shared home.
Shared home. As you said that, Jonathan, I pictured a massive home. Let's put a number on it. I'm in footage.
Yeah.
10,000 square feet, 15 bedrooms, 10 bathrooms. Massive. And that you can't see anyone else for miles around because the property is so big on which this 10,000 square foot home stands. One person lives in that home. What does that conjure up for you?
Oh, Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
Awful, lonely, awful. The sad end to a life, isn't it? That the lonely figure. Citizen Kane, and what's there? I think this is what haunts us most. You know, we've talked about whether we're ready for death. What's the most haunting idea that we have? I know mine because I think it. In the wonderful introduction to David Brooks' Road to Character, each of the chapters looks at a figure from history, not just American history, from world history, and looks at their particular road to character. But his own personal introduction is superb. And he talks about this is where he says in his own introduction that I feel I'm writing this book to save myself. He actually writes. I remember reading that and thinking, oh, here we go. This is you've got me now. Now you've got my attention.
Because he was in despair. Knowing what could be and what was not all around him.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember hearing him speak of that.
Yeah.
And that lack of character was being rewarded.
Yes, yes. And I think it's in that introduction, and I'm going to make a guess. I think he was referring to either a short story or a play by Chekhov. I think. It doesn't matter what I think. It's good to name Chekhov because he's... If we want to read something short and simple, but we get to the heart of the human soul in all its complexity, then the short story by Chekhov is the way to do it. Just unbelievable. But what's the haunting idea? And I remember reading this part of this of David Brooks' introduction. I thought, oh God, yeah, this is it. There is nothing worse than this. And it's the idea that you reach a moment in your life and you realize that you have not lived your life well and maybe it's too late to change that. Can you imagine a worse idea? That is just terrifying, damning, that you have... I mean, we all know what it's like to miss an opportunity, yeah? We all know what it's like to waste an opportunity. It can when you've grasped something, you've held it, and then you've let it go. Yeah, that's already bad enough. But this feeling, this idea that you realize, perhaps on your deathbed, you know, how bad that would that be on your deathbed, that you've realized it's not so much that you've been a bad person. You're not thinking about this crime or that crime, this lie or that lie, but somehow you've just not understood it. And in my moments of despair, deep despair, another mantra that has sprung to my own mind is, oh God, I've not understood the rules of the game, have I? I've not understood what this game is about.
Would you want to?
Yes, yes.
Are you sure?
Yes, 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 yes. Desperately wanting to know. Not because there is one set of rules. You know, we're not trying to unlock. There is no one secret to life here. We all have to find our own path. Yeah, we all have to find our own path. But this awful idea, it's just terrifying that you either wake up one morning or go to sleep one night on your own, and you just realize, I've not lived my life, have I? I've not lived my life. What an awful feeling that must be. I can't think of anything worse. Right now, I can't think of anything worse.
And bringing up the thread of mother, there are millions of mothers who feel that daily, where they are acutely aware of giving up their life to nurture and support the lives of others. Even in their small family unit, it can be so easy to set yourself to the side one day in the name of helping a child or a partner. And a decade goes by and you look back and ask yourself, why am I so angry? And that sentence can't even bubble up to the surface where you say, I have to start living my life. Nobody is giving me that option, so I have to take it myself. Mm-hmm. And then how do I do so without squandering the last decade of my investment in other people's lives? Other people I love, other people I cherish. I wouldn't have taken it back, but where the hell did I go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have to be very clear here. This is what we're not talking about here is achievement.
No.
This is not about that. This is not somebody who is in despair because she didn't manage to do this, or she didn't manage to do that. She didn't manage to write a book or run a company or have children. Well, it's not about achievement. It's something. And yeah, I can feel the feeling because I have felt it in moments of despair. That there is something, there is some truth about what it is to live a good life that I just hadn't understood in a deep way. And it hurts, really hurts. And it's terrifying as a vision of the future. The worst, the darkest ghost of Christmas future is the one, and I think Dickens had caught on to this. This is what Dickens was writing about, wasn't it? In Scrooge, it can a moment of redemption. Can we redeem ourselves? Can we change at any age in our life, and not by suddenly achieving more, but by understanding what life is really about, understanding what matters.
And what did his character, Mr. Scrooge, do?
Well, in the end, it's love, isn't it? He finds his way back to love.
At a number of junctures in these conversations, Jonathan, do you see that you had resigned yourself?
Yeah, good word.
And so I go back to one of your declarations for you and for anyone else who ever hears you. Whatever was past doesn't have to be. Today we break with the past and stand on new ground.
Yes.
And so as you go forward, and even if you're, you use the word terrified, I'm going to modify it a bit, concerned about moving forward, living the good life. If you know what your North Star is, which you do now, you've given yourself the clarity to know where you're heading, that, quote, destination, and the truth of who you are and what you're here to do. That can be a powerful compass for your good life, a reliable one, because you will know when you've stepped off, if you've stepped off that path.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So one last thing. You have, through Illumify so far, through all of those Illuminate questions, had many conversations, and I'm very aware that even though you stipulated that you can fall silent in certain conversations, depending on the numbers, for example, you also would agree that you enjoy, maybe even love, conversation in itself. Yeah. So there are, through life, we have, first of all, recognize that not everybody does. Not everyone likes conversation, and not because it discloses them to some degree, what they feel, what they think. But even those who like it may not be adept at it. You are masterful at it. And so I just want to draw a distinction between your love for conversation and your ability to do it and these conversations.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you see a distinction?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
These are not conversations for themselves, for the purpose of having a conversation. They're a conversation for you to surface your truth. Now we're moving on to amplify. So in that context, Illuminate was for you. And now you're going to embark on expressing that for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We are now in Amplify, Jonathan. And Amplify has a lot in it. We're continuing your journey. And I want to speak of that journey in a way as a path. You have found your path. Now you're stepping forward to start to navigate that path. But it is no longer you as a solo traveler. So what do you pick up from Illuminate, what you saw, what you cleared in Illuminate to bring with you along that path? I know you like to travel light, so if you had a little knapsack, what would you put in it from Illuminate that could be of value now as you enter the collective?
It might be some object from the table where we have sat together for many, many hours.
As a many days now.
Yeah, many days. As a reminder. I say that because I think I would struggle to put something in that knapsack that would embody everything that we've discussed. I'd be, that's mm-hmm. why sometimes we take an object just to stimulate memory, mm-hmm. don't we? A keepsake, mm-hmm. something that would bring me back to this moment now.
Okay. Let me phrase it differently then. What is it, shared home, what is it that you need to amplify for them? And amplify is to enable them to hear you, to understand you. What is it you need them to hear and understand?
Emotion. I'm reaching for that word, and it's not the full answer. I'm reaching for it instinctively. Simply because we know the need. We know the need for emotion
mm-hmm.
in a vision, in a message, in mm-hmm. a speech, in mm-hmm. language.
Mm-hmm. In order for it to resonate with them.
Yes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. There is going to be feeling. I call it feeling, not emotion.
Yeah.
Rather than just fact.
Yes. Yes.
But what is it that you need them to feel about? What is that singular thing you're bringing forward that you elucidated for yourself?
Mm.
You illuminated for yourself.
We need to amplify our need for something, urgency. If today we are breaking with the past, so that we stand together on new ground, they need to feel why this is necessary, urgent, why the past was intolerable, and how we need a response to this, which is full of truth and hope. Do they not need to hear something from me personally, from the heart, in that first moment of declaring the vision, publishing the vision, in whichever form it takes, and however long that takes? Do you not have to put yourself on the line in some way? The meme might be you have to own it. Do you not have to own it? So this is not amplifying you, the person. It's not about aggrandizing yourself. That's completely missing the point. You yourself are not the vision. We're very clear about that. You are not the vision. That's the road of the autocrat or the dictator.
You're the emissary for it.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Better. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that word here. Yeah.
And you knowingly see that, first of all, they have to believe it's possible to break from the past, right, and stand on new ground. Mm. They have to see that that's possible, but that may be the first thing they have to hear, that the current, the past, is unacceptable.
Yes.
And then they have to know that there's an alternative, which is your vision. So you have a lot to amplify. But if you just tell them we break with the past, we stand on new ground, and not tell them what that new ground is, which is your vision.
Yes, absolutely.
You're actually destabilizing them.
Sure.
Because now even what they're standing on, it's even more abhorrent in some ways to them.
Sure.
So you see the conjunction.
Yeah.
So it's a lot to amplify, but what is it then, as you move forward into amplify, that is in that knapsack of yours? What did you surface primarily, the essence of it, the clarity that you had, the essence of that clarity that you can put in your knapsack and move forward and iterate at every opportunity?
The heart of the vision.
Yes, the heart of the vision.
Yeah.
Okay. Knowing what is most meaningful to you, as Jonathan says, gives you the North Star by which to navigate the rest of your life. And there's huge comfort and reassurance in that, as it reveals your path to a fulfilling life. Of course, you have to be willing and able to realize it. This is where the leader's journey moves from emerging as a leader as you see the meaningful change you could ignite to being effective as a leader. That involves a lot, beginning with amplifying both yourself and your leadership initiative. We begin to help Jonathan amplify in the very next episode. Stay tuned. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the Leader's Journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change. Thank you.